Hello, listeners. I think you'll agree with me that that episode with Louisa was quite fascinating to listen to. I actually ended up editing this episode myself, so sorry for any glitches you may have heard. So I listened to both parts of Louisa's episodes 3 times, and I found it just as engaging each time. Louisa has this wonderful ability to put you at ease while also carrying this immense strength and groundedness where she both takes and holds space. It's amazing. Imagine what she's like in ceremony when she's holding space in that setting, singing and playing instruments and channeling that ancient ayahuasca energy. Oof, I can tell you a little something about that. She sings very beautifully, and one of my favorite parts of her ceremony is when she sings one of her Ikaros in Arabic. And I'm telling you, when I've heard that, my heart has literally started dancing. So I have many things to reflect on and to share, but I wanted to start with something that I picked up when I listened to it afterwards, which is that I referred to ayahuasca and the feminine a few times, and I realized that I did not properly explain why in the episode, and it bothered me a little bit, so I thought that it might be something that some listeners also wanted to know. So I'm actually going to read out something written by a writer online called Haley Noble that I think perfectly describes where the idea of Mother Aya or Mama Aya or ayahuasca as a feminine, where it comes from. So she writes, "The ayahuasca vine is a female plant referred to with she, her pronouns in traditional ceremonies, but this connection to mother is a primarily Western interpretation. The idea of divine feminine source as the mother draws upon the basis of creation. Ayahuasca's ability to connect people to the divine feminine is a powerful testament to the sacred maternal role. Essential in nurturing and cultivating growing minds, feminine love and care are the foundation of many people's early memories. Connecting to the deeply feminine divine mother always allows people to heal and move through traumas etched deeply into their psyche. Often, Mother Ayahuasca does not give seekers what they want, but rather what they need, just as any loving mother would look out for her children's best interest." I really liked the way she described that, and it was a great summary, so I wanted to share that, and all of that rings very true on a personal level. So anyway, that clears that up. Now back to Louisa. In part one, Louisa talked about her journey from war-torn Iraq and then to asylum in the Netherlands. And she was trapped in this asylum system for 8 years. And I cannot even begin to imagine having my life on hold for 8 years like that, particularly during such an incredibly vulnerable and lonely time in her life, in anyone's life, really. When you've left home and there's war and you're separated from your family. So those of us who have been very privileged with safety and freedom of movement will never viscerally understand that sort of trapped and powerless feeling. And I hope we never do. More than that, though, I really hope for a future in which less people would have to endure that. The present times are sadly very different. We are living during political times when the exact opposite is true, when our borders are being tightened more than ever and refugees are abused and belittled in terrible ways. But I hope that hearing the reality of a life like Louisa's can shed light on where it's needed and maybe even guide you as an individual towards some act that may relieve the anguish of the next person you meet who has or is going through similar circumstances. I also found it fascinating the way she spoke about tools that help you in one instance, in her case, surviving bombs in Iraq, how those tools can perhaps backfire in the future when they're no longer useful in another context. I think we can often congratulate strength and resilience so much that we forget the consequences they can have. Also, we are not meant to be surviving in a state of high arousal and protectiveness all the time. That would wipe out our energy levels and deregulate our hormones pretty quickly. Battles don't go on forever. Marathons don't go on forever. At some point, you stop, you rest, you recover, you strategize, and then maybe you go again, maybe you don't. But you don't stay in that hyper state forever. But if you have had to repeatedly do that because of a situation like war, and particularly as a child, our brain and systems think that this is normal and that's the way it's meant to be. And so you take that with you into situations that don't require it. A conversation with a friend, an interaction with your boss, the way you look at your ambition and hopes. Imagine being disassociated for all of those things. What sort of quality of interaction would you have? Not a very fruitful one, I imagine. So that duality exists. Awareness is the key to breaking that link. And then I would say some love and kindness on top of that. Because I think it is important to acknowledge that the protection your brain gave you at a certain point, even to thank it, and then to gently say, you know, hey, thanks, thank you for protecting me, but I actually don't need this anymore, and I think it might be limiting my progress, so you can go on your way now. I say love and kindness because it won't want to give up on you that easily. It thinks it's doing you a favor, a good service, so you'll have to be gentle but firm. Luisa also mentioned how trauma is how you reacted or interpreted a situation or event, not necessarily the event itself. So if anyone is tempted to compare their suffering with others, let me tell you, that's a losing game. There's always someone better or worse off, but that doesn't help you help yourself. We are individuals, and depending on what you believe or know about epigenetics, reincarnation, universal connectivity, sensitivity, and other factors, your baggage and how heavy they feel is relative. So focus on yourself, and then when you're good, you can start to look outwards. Another key takeaway, and one I think it's important to reiterate, is that trauma and the past can catch up with you, and often when you least expect it, and when things are going well. As per Louisa's point on her sort of beginning to fall apart after she was technically safe and allowed to remain in the Netherlands and having attained refugee status, being able to actually start her life and work and study. And that's when it all hit her. So that sort of brings me to my own story with ayahuasca and why and how I reached the plant medicine. It began a few years ago in 2019, after I returned to my hometown of London, after 7 years living abroad in the Middle East, working as a journalist. Those years were the best of times, but also some of the hardest times. While my career in journalism was taking off and I got to travel the region and go to amazing places across the Gulf countries, to Iran even, and across the Levant, I was also witnessing the tragedy of failed protest movements, civil war, death, displacement, and chaos in many of those countries, two of which I'm related to, Libya and Syria. I lost family members, I lost connections, I lost access, I lost beautiful times that will never ever be recreated, and I lost a lot of hope. But like almost everyone else, I didn't stop too long to reflect on this. I kept working, doing my job, traveling around, listening to story after story, and following the news. I also, around this time, and perhaps they are related or not, began to feel increasingly lonely. Living in the UAE brought me so many opportunities, but I was alone there. My family lived elsewhere, my old friends lived back home, and the transient nature of the place means people were coming and going. I did have a wonderful small cohort of friends, but the loneliness was growing. It was also growing because I was feeling less and less fulfilled by the day, by the work I was doing, by the institution I was working for, by the people I was around. I was essentially out of balance, misaligned, I would say, and I wanted to go home. So I went back to London, where I wanted to nourish some roots. But up until this point, I was, sure, a little uneasy and maybe a little unhappy, but I was largely okay, functioning, moving, socializing, traveling, being a fairly like normal person, whatever that means. Then I arrived to London. And after the initial few months of excited landing and, you know, celebrating being home, and the cracks began to appear. So it started with a panic attack, actually the one and only I've ever had. And soon after that, anxiety reared its head and didn't really let me go. It was like an electric pulse was running through me, sometimes low level, like it was on standby. Sometimes it was buzzing, racing my heart rate and filling me with this feeling of dread. Then I started to get really down. I went through a serious period of deep reflection over my past and my present, and there was a lot I didn't like or want to see. I'm not really going to go into the inner details of this period in this episode because there's plenty more to share, but suffice it to say that it was a deeply shit period. Even if it might have been necessary, it felt truly horrendous. This went on for a couple of months and people around me started to worry. To be honest, I was beginning to worry because I wasn't really able to shake it off, and I felt like it was really dragging me down into a place that I wasn't able to get out of. It wasn't me and it wasn't who I wanted to be, but it did feel very difficult for me to find a way out. Thankfully, I did. One friend recommended her therapist, whose door I arrived at in a very weepy mess and who has been wonderful for me ever since. Another friend recommended an ayahuasca retreat in Peru that she had been to herself. Now, I wasn't completely unaware about ayahuasca. I had been interested in it for quite a while and I had even done one ceremony in Europe. But going to the source and staying for some days was a very different story. But I was both a little bit desperate and mostly confident that it was the right thing to do. The retreat itself is a beautiful space, nestled in this wild and abundant jungle, a small lake in the heart of the site, wooden cabins dotted around. It was instant peace. Honestly, ayahuasca aside, the space itself was just so relieving, and I think a real testament to the power of nature in and of itself to be soothing and healing. The next day, I had my first ceremony. I had done the dieta beforehand, which consists of mainly a 10-day reduced intake of meat, salt, sugar, any drugs, pharmaceutical or otherwise, alcohol, and caffeine. My first ceremony was pretty light. And actually, I'm going to read out a little part of my diary that I wrote in straight after that ceremony. It was a good one, mellow and pleasant overall. Geometric visuals to begin with, and then I purged at the gong. I could see ayahuasca working through the vibrations to release the hidden spirits or darkness, as if shaking loose the parts stuck behind my ribs. I thought it was a vision of how she worked generally until I suddenly stood up and purged and realized that it was me. I felt like sometimes I was in my head a bit too much. No big surprise there. But how to get out of that? Surrender, trust, love. Those remain my biggest challenges, but also my biggest intentions. A couple of days later, I had my second ceremony. Before that one, the shaman suggested I do something called a tree sap cleanse to clean my gut, which would help absorb more of the plant medicine, since I told you I'd had a fairly light experience in the first one. I have to admit that it is literally one of the most disgusting things I've ever drunk, but I think the result was I had a super shiny intestine, and definitely the results of it were quite immediate. Second ceremony, after drinking one cup, I blasted off into the stratosphere. This is how I describe it in my diary. The ceremony was remarkably intense. It felt like I had been strapped onto two missiles of ayahuasca and lifted off into the universe. So much light shone into my closed eyelids, I absolutely could not open my eyes at all. It was like my third eye had been ripped open with such force, and I felt my temples throb with what they were receiving. In the light, I could see my face at one point. I saw so many shapes, colors, visions. The healing I received from the shaman was amazing. My pains and aches of the past few days have gone. He worked them all out of my back. My arms went numb after a while. He said after that he felt that there was a lot of confusion within me, and also that my way of dealing with trauma is not always conducive to healing. And that rings true. I even felt during the healing that sometimes my mind would wander to thoughts to avoid seeing what I needed to see out of fear. And here's an entry from my last ceremony before I left the jungle. Beautiful night, such a different energy, much lighter, more playful, and a lot of jokes. I still purged a few loud demons. I kept getting the message to just focus on myself. Ayahuasca kept repeating that to me. I realized how much energy and thought is spent by me thinking about other people and what they are feeling and thinking and experiencing. So she kept telling me to keep my focus on me and not get wrapped up in what was going on with other people. It also felt that way in answer to many things. These are just a few snippets of my entries. Most of them are really squiggly in the aftermath of ceremony, but I just felt like sharing some of that. It's been a while since I had even really looked at them. So thank you for listening to those. I hope that maybe clarifies a little bit of what it's like in the moment, but ultimately it's a very individual experience for everyone. And what I got out of it was beautiful, and I definitely integrated a lot of it when I came back. I felt like I made wonderful connections with people there and the place. I experienced also a wonderful disconnection from the constant internet and electricity and buzzing sounds of electronics. I made a beautiful relationship with nature. I left feeling revitalized, and honestly, like, I couldn't believe that the person who'd arrived the week before had been this leaky, worried, anxious person. But the important thing is that I still, like I said, had work to do after that, and I recognized that. Things didn't just miraculously change. I made important realizations and shifts, but there were still habits of thought and practice I had to change and life decisions to make. And thankfully, I had a very good therapist and a loving support system and time for myself to do those things. Because at the end of the day, time is key for anything, healing, and in whatever way that you do it. That's probably one of the most important lessons I've learned recently, is give yourself time, be patient, be kind, and you will get to where you want to be. And with that, I say goodbye for now, and thank you for listening.